Well, hello there. Welcome to the Mill Housing Nation, What I Wish I Would Have Known Before I PCS'd podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Linton. Over the next 20 minutes, we're dishing out tips, tricks, and actionable steps you can implement to make your next PCS an easy one. Before we get started, a quick shout out to our sponsor, Mill Housing Network. Mill Housing Network connects military families with local military real estate experts all over the country. If you're considering buying or selling a home, go to milhousingnetwork.com or search us on Facebook. All right. So, Christina Laycock, welcome to Mill Housing Nation. We're excited to have you. So, Christina.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Yes. Well, before we started recording, Christina and I were comparing notes. We've actually been to a lot of the same stations. So, I'm excited to have you on the show. So, Christina, how long have you been a military spouse, I should say?
Just over 19 years now. But I'm also an Army brat. My father was actually in the military growing up, and so I've only been a civilian, I guess, for a year and a half during high school. And high school is where I met my husband, and he joined right after, and we've been in the military ever since.
Okay, so this has been your life, pretty much.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Pretty much.
So 19 years, how many PCSs in the 19?
Oh, good question. Let's see. Texas, and then New Mexico, and then Nevada, and then California, Texas again, and now in Virginia. So I guess 7 now.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that's about on par with what when folks say, like, we've been in the military for 19 years, and it's usually around that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. So I'm actually excited because Christina is a fellow MySoy. And if you don't know what MySoy is, it's Military Spouse of the Year. And Christina was nominated for this honor when you were stationed in Beale, right?
Yes, Beale 2016, I believe.
Awesome. So tell me more about what MySoy means to you and just a little bit more about the program and how you utilized it for while you were in Beale.
The Military Spouse of the Year program was a great way to get your voice heard louder than just your local network. I actually didn't know a lot about it until I was nominated, and so I didn't do anything in particular to seek out the award. It's just I was very active in volunteering at Beale. I was a key spouse. I was on the Spouses Club. I did a lot of volunteering for the Airman's Attic. Just anywhere I could really help out, I was there.
I love it.
So the Military Spouse of the Year Award was just somebody nominated me, and then there was a voting process, and it was kind of a way to recognize me in another way.
That's
and
great.
And since winning, I was able to use the Military Spouse of the Year Award to network with other Military Spouse of the Years to get the issues that I felt were lacking or in need of help heard by bigger ears and somebody with, you know, more pull to help out with the actual issues.
Well, and I think that's so important for our community is just getting our voices heard. I know one of the topics that you consider yourself an expert on, and you mentioned it as you were talking about your award, is your community involvement and jumping right in and getting involved in new communities. Can talk to us more about that.
Sure. I think when I was a young military spouse, you know, newbie, I was very... I wouldn't say content, but I was very apt to sit in the background and wait for opportunities to come to me. And even the ones that did, if I wasn't happy about it, I was like, oh, well, you know, it should be this way, or, you know, why didn't they do it this way? And it came maybe after I had been a spouse for maybe 8-10 years, I came to the realization that why am I complaining if I'm not willing to step up and do something about it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I see there's an issue that needs help with or an area that's lacking and needs some attentiveness, then why am I not stepping up to help out with that? And once I came to that realization, you know, I'm not going to be a complainer. I'm not going to be somebody that's just going to wait for opportunities to come to me. I'm going to make them happen.
I love that. And I think that jump in and do it spirit is what a lot of military spouses, that's kind of how we've dealt with, at least me personally.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a coping mechanism because every
exactly.
every time I move, I'm like, well, I could feel really sorry for myself that I don't have any friends, or I could get out of my comfort zone and just go talk to some of the other moms.
Mm-hmm. Like, hi, we haven't met before, but we're best friends now.
Yeah, I know. Do you want to be my emergency contact?
Yes, that's always one of my first conversations. Hi, I know I just moved here and we're neighbors, but can I put you down in case something happens for my children?
I know. Poor military spouses. I know. I met another military spouse when we moved to Colorado Springs, and that's in a whole nother story about how we met with our children. And she laughed and she goes, I don't know anyone either. Can I list you as my emergency contact? I said, deal, if I can list you. So,
yep.
So I know issues.
Certain things in the military community would be completely weird, you know, if you went to your civilian next door neighbor and said, hi, we haven't met yet, but I need you for an emergency situation.
In case
What's
my
your
kids...
name and contact info?
Yeah, in case I die in an accident, nobody can get a hold of me. I need someone to, yeah, I know. I think about that all the time. Sometimes when I'm having conversations with people not in the military, and I feel like as military spouses, we get to know each other really quick, and you just start asking pretty deep questions right off the bat. And sometimes I get these looks, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot. We got to take it slower.
Well, when you think about it, your friendship is on a 2 to 4 year time limit at best. So you're like, I need to make friends now. We don't have that, you know, decade to develop those deep connections. It has to happen now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got to go. And I feel like I need to figure out, do I like you pretty quickly if I want to spend time with you? Because I only have 3 to 4 years before we're going to move.
Mm-hmm.
Audrey, my assistant, is laughing. What is an issue within the military spouse community that you're particularly passionate about solving?
I think the most important issue that I like to focus on is kind of like a two-part, military spouse education and employment. Obviously, one helps the other. Military spouses, I mean, even if you look at my own resume, it's spotty at best. It's all over the place. You know, you work in one state for 2 years, and you work in the next state for 4 years, and oftentimes it's not in your desired career or something that you have an education background in. It's, you know, what's available, what job can you get? And I think that either a lot of spouses don't realize that they have the resources to continue their education, or they think that this is the job market that's out there. This is what I have to accept. My spouse's career must come first. And, you know, if this is the only thing I can do to help out, then so be it.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of issues that a military spouses face, at least from doing these podcast interviews and talking within the military spouse community, and I can speak from my own experience, sometimes it takes rethinking your career path and rethinking your options and getting really creative. And I think sometimes that's stepping outside maybe what traditionally has been done and looking at, for me personally, it was virtual career options. How can I do things that move with me? How can I create my own business so that I can take it everywhere I go? And that was never on my radar, honestly, until I started running into some of the issues that you talked about. You have a spotty resume, you go in to have a job interview, and all of a sudden you're not qualified, or you're getting denied for opportunities that should have been a slam dunk, because they ask, what does your spouse do?
Exactly.
So I love that. What 3 steps and action items do you think listeners can do to solve these problems? Because I know you gave some really in-depth insight here, and I'd love to hear from you personally firsthand on some of the grants and scholarship programs that are available to spouses.
Sure. They're too numerous to list, I obviously, in one podcast, but a lot of military spouses think that, you know, they don't have the finances or the time or the availability to continue their education or start their education. And I kind of was in that mindset as well. And I actually went back to school when we were stationed in California, and I thought the same thing. Like, it just wasn't fiscally responsible at the time. My daughter was, you know, only two or three when I went back to school, and I'm like, it's not smart for our family. But I had a mentor spouse, somebody through my husband's squadron, that is like, there is no better time than now.
Mm-hmm.
If you start now, that just gets you quicker to your goal, and if you truly want it, you can make it happen. And she was able to point me in right directions and help me get grants and scholarships. And California had some excellent, excellent laws when it came to community college and military spouses. In California, the tuition costs for military spouses are completely waived.
Wow.
And if you apply through FAFSA, they actually paid me to go to school.
Holy Toledo, that's amazing.
The care of child care costs. at our local community college was taken care of. So when I went to school, my daughter went to this preschool next door, and it was actually a really nice setup that the accounting side of the school was right next to the preschool, so I could literally look out of the classroom and see my daughter playing right next door.
Wow.
So that made me feel very, very secure and that I was doing the right thing, and it was smart for not only me, but my family as well.
Wow. That's amazing.
But there's all kinds of grants. There's all kinds of scholarships. There is companies that want to hire you and put you through college. So it's out there if you look.
Uh-huh. And I think one of the other things you talked about was not settling.
Yes, not settling.
Tell us about that, because I feel like a lot of military spouses, and I see it in the Facebook groups, where they've gotten a job offer and I think their gut says, I want to negotiate, but then a lot of people are just like, nope, we're just going to take it because it is what it is, and we're going to move on. And it kind of hurts my heart to hear that a lot of military spouses feel that they can't negotiate for their self-worth and they settle.
Mm-hmm. Like they feel like their foundation is too unstable, that if they rock the boat a little bit, they're going to fall and crumble. Mm-hmm. When it comes to settling, not only for salaries, but even the job themselves, if you know you're completely qualified and you're just not getting the hits and you feel like, okay, maybe I should start putting in for jobs that I'm way overqualified for, or even maybe a little demeaning. I don't want to say that, you know, any job isn't, you know, an appropriate job or something to be proud of. But if you have, you know, a degree in finance and you find yourself working at Burger King or McDonald's because that's the only person that's willing to give you a callback interview, and you feel like, okay, well, this is obviously the only thing that I deserve, so this is what I should be working at. That's settling in my mind.
Yeah.
There are so many resources out there that provide either remote type positions or telecommuting positions, mm-hmm. that you don't have to limit yourself based on your geographical area or what job market is locally. I mean, you can think globally when it comes to military spouse and employment.
Oh, and I think that there's so many opportunities now that we have, and I hate saying this, but I feel like I'm a more seasoned spouse. My service member has, you know, 4 years left before he retires at his 20. And I will say, given my journey as a military spouse, 5 years ago, virtual employment wasn't as big as it is now. So I feel like because of technology, because of employers knowing that a virtual workforce is a viable option, I think military spouses are primed for those opportunities right now. And I know there's a lot of there's Facebook groups, there's organizations. I know I do a lot with the military spouse division of Hiring Our Heroes. And they have virtual job fairs. They have local job fairs. So there's opportunity everywhere if you're seeking it out.
Absolutely. If you're looking, you will find something that works for you and your family.
Yes. I was just watching a podcast with a friend of mine who just went to Inc. 5000 in San Antonio. And she's a military spouse, and she runs a staffing firm. And she was talking about how employers are having a tough time finding employees. And she educated that room of Fortune 500 companies about military spouses and how our unemployment rate is quadruple the national average. And it opened their eyes. And I think military spouses now have more opportunities because of the inroads that we're all making on that fight.
Military spouses as a whole is a great untapped resource. I mean, we are an army ready and willing. I just think that a lot of employees, like you say, are starting to realize this. And I applaud companies that, you know, want to hire military veterans. But I think that, you know, military spouses as well should, you know, be held to the same standard. Like if you want to hire a military veteran, military spouses too is another way to support your local military community and to show your appreciation.
Yes, yes. You're preaching to the choir. I've talked many times about how I love our veterans. I love all the support that they have given and the sacrifices they've given to our country, and they absolutely deserve all the recognition. And spouses also give a lot, even though we don't serve. And so I appreciate those that recognize the military spouse as well. What are three things you wish you would have known before you PCS to your current station?
My current station. Well, we're at a very unique situation. As my entire childhood being an Army brat and my entire adulthood being an Air Force spouse, I've never not been attached to a physical base. We are at a location where there is no base. There's a collection of office buildings where my husband works at that are all branches of military and civilians, but that is it. There is no base. There is no, you know, you drive on, you get carded. It's nothing like that. It's pretty much like an office job, and we live 99.9% of civilians.
Wow.
Our closest military installations, we have Langley, that's about 2.5 hours to the east. We have Balling, that's about another 2.5 hours to the north, but we are not near a military installation.
Wow. That's pretty crazy.
It's kind of like an outpost type situation.
Okay.
And so it was really, really funny when he told us where we were getting stationed. I'm like, oh, okay, that's nice. What base? And he's like, there's no base. I'm like, I don't know what that means. Tell me more about this. I mean, because normally I have a set plan of attack. You know, we get stationed at a new base. I know exactly where to plug myself in, where to volunteer, where to go to make friends. It's, you know, it's my plan, A, B, C, D, E. And So when we moved here, we are completely civilianized, and it's scary. And also, it's kind of nice because my husband retires within a year.
Okay.
So it's been kind of like a gentle slide into civilian life to prepare us for it. But there's no base housing. There's no on-base hospital. There's no on-base schools. It's completely civilian life.
Wow. Well, and I suppose it is a nice transition into retirement because I know it is an adjustment when you go from...
It was a big adjustment.
My business partner, Karina's husband, just retired, and it was about a year of an adjustment. She said it was a little bit kind of like an identity crisis, to go from being active duty and being really involved with squadrons to now you're retired.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So you created a Facebook group, it looks like.
Yes.
Tell us more about that and what folks can do in the Facebook group and what value they're getting out of it and how you're creating community through the group.
When we first moved here, there, like I said, there's a collection of buildings, there's all branches and civilian, so there's no real squadron per se, or there's no work network. There's different branches that all have different jobs, so each branch and different job has their own contacts, and so it's really like set apart. I got in touch with another spouse that my husband happened to work with, and we were just talking, and I was asking her, what resources are available? You know, where is the Key Spouse program, or what? Where can I go to connect, to join, to volunteer? Where are the social groups? And she said, "There's none." And I had to question her. I'm like, "What do you mean there's none? There's probably close to 3,000 families stationed here. How is there no network? How is there no Key Spouse program? How is there no FRG group for the Army? I mean, there has to be something." And she's like, "Well, we." You know, if there's an issue, somebody from Balling comes or somebody from Langley comes. Well, I'm like, what about before there's an issue? How do we get this going? And she said, well, I don't know. So I started talking to my husband's command, his higher-ups, saying how can we get this started? And it started with just a Facebook group. I would add names of people that I know, other military spouses. At first it started just Air Force because that's what I'm my husband's Air Force. And I knew some Air Force spouses that he worked with. But then other branches started getting involved saying, hey, we heard this was happening. How can we get involved? So we added all of the spouses. And then civilians came to us as well saying, well, you know, our husband, wife isn't military, but we really appreciate this type of network, whether it's, you know, for resources or just for a social aspect of it. We're like, come and join as well. So it grew from, I think it started 12 of us, and now there's a good 800 families that are on our Facebook group.
That's awesome.
We do two socials a month. We do networking and informational meetings twice a month. And then we also get together and just post for incoming families. As soon as you get orders and are confirmed, we will add you to the group. And due to the nature of our husband's jobs, we do have to get command to approve just to make sure that the affiliation is correct.
Mm-hmm.
And once you are approved, you're added to our group, and we can show you any advice that we have, areas that you're interested in living at. Because there's no base attached, you don't know, there's no military housing. There's
mm-hmm.
no, you know, you don't go to the base housing and put your name on a list. It's completely search and find. You're at the mercy of whatever civilian housing market is out there.
Mm-hmm.
So we do give advice for housing, schools. If you have a question, we're willing to help.
Wow.
There's no base hospital here, so we are at the civilian medical, I think UVA is here. There's a big UVA presence. So whatever questions that you have, it started out as just a couple of spouses sitting around a table saying, why isn't this available? And kind of me jumping in there and saying, well, I will make it happen.
Wow. That's awesome. And I think it's a testament to what we talked about earlier in the podcast where you mentioned, you know, you have the spirit of just jumping in and getting involved. And I think this is a huge way that you're providing value to a lot of military families. So thank you for doing that for our community.
Well, thank you.
That's awesome.
Well, it just didn't sit right with me. Like, if there's nothing available, I'm not just going to sit back and accept that. I'm going to make it happen. Even when I was actually military spouse of the year for where we're stationed at, Rivanna Station, but even the military spouse of the year program didn't even recognize Rivanna Station.
Oh, no.
So they were like, you were nominated, but we don't know where to put you. And I'm like, well, we might not be a huge base, but we're 3,000 strong here. You know, we are here. We need to be recognized.
We are here. Wow. Well, that's amazing. And I think the value that you're providing to the military spouse community and the community that you serve, I mean, you're just doing awesome things. So if anybody does stationed in that area, how do they find your group? What's the name of your group?
Military Spouses of Rivanna Station.
Okay, perfect. So if our listeners are going...
You can search and find our group, but you have to get permission to be at it.
Okay, perfect. So if anyone, if we hear of anyone too, we'd be happy to connect them with you so that they can get more information. So our last question is a fun one, and we always want to know like some crazy true fact about our podcast guests. And I think yours is pretty creative. So tell us one crazy true fact about you.
Crazy true fact is my husband and I have the same name. We are both Chris Laycock.
That's awesome. Do you ever get mail confusion going on in your household?
Oh, it's worse than that. We've gotten mail. We've gotten our medical records mixed up.
Oh,
there's been times where I've gone to the hospital and his x-rays will show up under my profile or, you know, vice versa.
Oh, jeez. All the things you wouldn't think about, I guess, that, you know, if you have the same name. Aw. Well, Christine, this has been...
When we met in high school, we both went by the name Chris, and it got too confusing, but my family still calls me Chris, and they call him Chris, and we actually briefly discussed before we had children, we thought maybe it would be a hoot to have juniors.
Oh, geez.
Or variations of.
You're just going to confuse the world.
Yeah, so in the end, we vetoed that idea, but we thought it would still be funny.
It would be pretty funny. Well, Christina, I have very much enjoyed our conversation. I hope our listeners have gotten some good tips from everything that you're doing. I think you're an inspiration to fellow military spouses that are sitting there. Maybe they're in a station and they're thinking, like, how do I create something? And I think you just gave our listeners a roadmap on just jump in and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
If you don't like something, if it's not up to your standard, if it could be improved, do it.
Yes.
Don't just sit there and complain and wait for change to happen. Be the change.
Be the change. I love it. I love it. Well, Christina, thank you so much for visiting with me today. And we want to thank you for sharing your time with us.
Thank you for having me.
To view today's show notes and to connect with our guest, visit milhousingnetwork.com. Click on the podcast tab and look for today's episode. To get connected to our local communities, join our Facebook group, Things I Wished I Knew Before I PCS'd on Facebook. And don't forget, also head over to iTunes and hit the subscribe button to subscribe to our podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Linton. Thank you so much for listening, and tune in next week as we feature another amazing guest. Bye for now, listeners.